Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, I'm not hearing my commercial.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans from around the world. Visit her website at starfuentes.com. Then join her here every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fuentes.
Welcome. After the half hour, we'll be taking questions. The number is 657-383-1612. I'm very, very pleased to have with me tonight Lisa Coffey. Lisa, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Star. So nice to talk with you.
It's, you know, we have so many friends in common and so many connections that I'm just so pleased to be here. Lisa, I am at your website, coffeetalk.com, and looking into your beautiful eyes and seeing that wonderful cup of coffee. It's crazy. You got like four or five books. You've been on every TV show. You have so much to offer. Lisa, I don't see anything about you. I've seen everything about what you've done. But please tell us, who are you? How did you start your spiritual path?
Okay, well, I guess I've always been a spiritual person, like even when I was a little girl, I was kind of that weird kid in the background that was speaking to her invisible friends, you know, which were probably my spirit guides at the time or whatever. But in the fifth grade, I asked my mom for my birthday for tarot cards, and she was like, "What? How do you know about that?" You know, and I was doing tarot card readings in the girls' bathroom at lunch on the campus. Once I became a parent, I started really studying all the different healing modalities, and I was at a school called the Healing Arts Center, and so we could study everything, and Louise Taylor was my teacher, and it was like a perfect fit for me at the time because when I was pregnant, I was just too sick to work. I had morning sickness so bad, and kind of one thing led to another, and I was like, how can I heal this naturally, and I'll try this, and I'll try that, and I learned as I went. And I ended up writing my first book, which was The Healthy Family Handbook, where I looked at 9 different healing modalities, including Ayurveda, which is the science of life from India. And I just fell in love with Ayurveda, and that has really become my life's work now. So I teach Ayurveda, I practice Ayurveda. I have this e-course about Ayurveda that's unlike anything else out there that we actually filmed in India with a Bollywood director, and it's 7.5 hours worth of video, and there's 2 books with it. I know, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. So it's called The Ayurveda Experience. So it's interesting because, you know, when I started learning about Ayurveda, that was back in like 94 is when I started learning about it, and nobody knew what it was. It was like some foreign word, nobody could pronounce it, nobody knew what it was. But now it's just starting to really get its foothold, and people are learning about it and getting familiar with it, and I think it's because of the popularity of yoga lately. You know, there's pretty much a yoga studio on every corner, and we can take yoga classes anytime we want, and people are seeing the benefits that they get out of yoga and out of meditation, and then they start saying, oh, well, what else can I do? What more is there? Well, all of these practices are sister sciences with Ayurveda. So Ayurveda, translated, means the science of life, and it's a 5,000-year-old practice that originated in India. It's all about living in harmony with nature, and it's all about learning your true self, learning who you are, and finding your own personal natural balance.
I think Ayurveda's wonderful, and I think it's taken its time to get here. I remember a long, long time ago, I was in maybe New Zealand with the Maori, and the Maori, we went out someplace to eat, and the Maori ate their desserts first.
What are you doing?
Why would you? They had, you know, and the Maori are known to be quite substantial people. So, you know, they had a couple of desserts each, and they said, this is Ayurvedic. And I had been in an ashram in India in 1970. I'm not going to admit to that right now. And I also love the Ayurvedic astrology.
Exactly, yes.
You know, and there's so many, many things that you can find when you get to study it. So it's using a little bit of a different elemental system makes you ask different questions than you normally would, you know.
Yeah, exactly. The basic philosophy behind Ayurveda is that everything in the universe is made up of the five elements. So it's air, space, fire, water, and earth. So everything, and that's called prakriti, which is matter. And we're each born with our own unique combination of these five elements. We all have all five elements in our system. However, you know, two or three of them probably express themselves more loudly in us, more dominantly in us.
What do you think an air person would be like? Would this be the little girl with the fairy skirts who floats around and dances through the room? What would a wood person be like? And what is a metal person like?
Well, wood and metal, that comes from the Chinese version of Ayurveda, like Chinese medicine and feng shui. Right. So that, what happened was Ayurveda started in India, and then the Buddhist monks carried it over into China, and it became Chinese medicine, and they kind of changed the elements more to their culture, what fit in well with their culture. But basically, in Ayurveda, there's three main combinations of elements that expresses three very different mind-body types, and those mind-body types are called our doshas. So the first one that you were talking about, the first one you're talking about, which is air and space. So a person who is dominant in Vata dosha, which is the combination of air and space being most dominant in your mind and body, tends to be someone who is more on the thin side. They have smaller bone structure. They could be tall or short, but they look lanky. You know, their joints poke out. You know, they've got those bony wrists, or long fingers, or, you know, elbows that are kind of awkward, or knobby knees kind of thing. They also
have... And they
look
a little clumsy to me always.
Yeah, they are a little bit. And if you think about celebrities, if you want to picture someone in that body type, it would be like a Gwyneth Paltrow or a... Jim Carrey, you know, he's all lanky and goofy kind of looking. And President Obama is actually very Vata in his type. So people like that have kind of the Vata body. And the Vata mind is very quick. It's very creative. They learn quickly, but then they forget quickly. And they tend to be visionaries. They love looking at the big picture of things. You know, they're the dreamers, they're the writers, they're the creative people in Hollywood. Hollywood has tons of Vata types, you know, tons and tons and tons. They tend to have more dry hair because, you know, the combination of air and space, as you can imagine, is more drying. It's cold. It's light. So all those properties go into the Vata type. So light meaning they aren't overly heavy in their physiology.
Yeah, but then diseases, certain diseases would follow, like psoriasis, dandruff, certain diseases where, you know, they tend, parts of themselves tend to disappear off, you know, right?
Yeah, they can, Vata types are definitely prone to Vata type of diseases, and Pitta types are prone to Pitta type diseases. And
okay, well, let's talk about the next type. What's the next type?
Okay. So Pitta is the second one. Pitta is made up of fire and water. Those are what's dominant. So fire and water is the more average body type, a little more muscular, a little more strong, and also a little more strong-willed. You know, they can be stubborn. They can be bossy. They, when they're in balance, they make good leaders. They make good politicians. They make good bosses at work. They have a very business-like mind. But when they're out of balance, they can be pushy and bossy and critical and judgmental and all that kind of stuff, you know. Because of the fire, it's heat. They tend to be hot quite a lot. And fire tends to show up in their skin and in their hair, too. So you might see freckles. You might see reddish hair. You might see early gray hair or even balding hair because fire rises, right? It's an upward moving thing, and all that heat kind of goes right to the head and burns off the hair. So Pitta type of people, that's kind of one giveaway, is if you shake their hand and it's a hot hand, or if it's a young man and he's bald, you know, already, it's early balding, then that's a tip off that he's a Pitta type as well. So celebrity-wise, it would be someone like Madonna is very much a Pitta type. You know, she's kind of she's a strong woman, and she knows what she wants, and she's ambitious, and she gets what she wants. Donald Trump is a Pitta man. You can definitely see the redness
in his hair.
Yeah, red in the hair, and I'm sure he's balding. He's just covering it.
I'm
red
sure
hair,
he's
right?
had more plastic surgery on his hair than most women have had on their, never mind.
Yeah. So, yeah, and Brad Pitt is another example. You know, he's kind of muscular, fairer skin, you know, more the average body type, but strong and a leader and definitely knows what he wants. So, those are all examples. So because of the heat also, Pitta type would be prone to ulcers and things like that, like stomach acid, things that too much heating. Like if you imagine a pot cooking on the stove and there's nothing in the pot, it burns the pot, right? So
correct.
Mm-hmm. Pitta people need to always have something in their stomach. So you don't want to let a Pitta person get hungry, because then they get angry and cranky and it's like, rah, 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 they're in
yeah,
a
like
bad
that
mood,
commercial,
you know?
Like that commercial to give that kind of person a candy bar, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, but
yes,
these are my people who I always recommend to have an apple or a cheese stick in their bag and
yeah.
you know, these are my 5-meal-a-day people, and they're
yeah,
really full
definitely.
Meals. And
yeah,
the last type.
So the last one is called Kapha, and that's spelled K-A-P-H-A. And Kapha people are more heavy set. Kapha is made up of earth and water. So you can imagine earth is more heavy. It's more moist. You know, when you shake a Kapha person's hand, it's warm, but it's also very soft and like squishy almost, you know. They're
like
very
me.
Gentle people. Yeah, they're very gentle people. They're very loving people. This is, with women, it's like the earth mama, that she just loves having family over. She loves feeding people. She's a big philanthropist. She just always wants to help. If you need somebody to help you out, call a Kapha woman, because she just comes in like the Calvary with her chicken soup and whatever you need, she'll take care of you, you know. And Kapha men are reliable and dependable and responsible and all that. You know, they're the follow-through people. Kaphas need a little bit more motivation because they can get stuck on things. You know, they... They need exercise and social. They need to exercise and they need to socialize. That's what I always say to them, exercise and socialize, because that keeps them stimulated and that keeps them up. If they are isolated for too long, they get depressed. They need people around them. They need friends around them. They need activity. You know, they tend to want to sit on the couch and relax and take it easy and eat and stuff like that, but that's not the best thing for them. They really need to get out there and go for a run, lift some weights, work up a sweat every once in a while, and that really helps keep them in balance.
So it's really important to understand about these types. But if all of these people had a certain disease, they would all be treated differently because of the type they are. I'm glad that just like here in the United States, if somebody gets a disease, no matter who you are, no matter what your whole system is, you get treated for the symptoms of that disease.
Exactly.
So this makes a lot of sense. According to your energy type, you get treated for your disease, or you also get preventative measures, you know. Like, you know, when you go to a doctor here, he'll say, take this pill, do this, do that. But when you go with the Ayurvedic, what happens is they will say things to you that say, and because you're this type, this other thing may occur with you. So to prevent that from occurring, here is another, you know, piece of advice. More holistic.
Exactly. It's very holistic. They look at the whole person. So basically they look at your prakriti, which is what you're made up of, and you're born with your prakriti. That's your natural state of balance. And then they look at your vikriti, which is your current state of imbalance. And it's like, how can we get you from imbalance back to balance? You know, and basically you look at what caused the imbalance in the first place. And almost always, it's something to do with food. I mean, that's the first thing you always look at. So you can imagine when you go to a lot of Western doctors, if you say you have a headache, they don't necessarily ask you, what have you been eating, right? But in Ayurveda, that's the first thing they ask, what have you been eating? Because you want to make sure you're eating right for your type. So there's
whole diets
food.
For each type.
Exactly. Exactly.
And do you, in your book, I thought you had a wonderful book called The Diet for Something or Other.
Yeah, I have a book called The Perfect Balanced Diet.
And that tells you
it's all about Ayurveda. Yes, and it tells you basically the premise behind it is the same thing as Ayurveda. Ayurveda says food isn't just what you eat with your mouth. It's what you eat with all five of your senses. So what you take in with your eyes and your ears and your nose and your touch, everything, that's all food for our system. And there are certain things that if we follow the Ayurvedic guidelines for our mind-body type, then we're going to be healthier and happier. We're going to be able to not get sick in the first place. And then if we happen to get out of balance, we can right that balance much more easily.
Well, it's just an amazing study, you know, and we attempt to do similar things here, you know. What your friends talk about is what you eat too, and you know, I say gossip is verbal terrorism, and people sit around and they listen to gossip and they go, really? And I go, you're part of the gossip. Well, I was just listening. No, you get up and leave. You know, somebody can sit and tell me Mary Jane is sick, and I go, really? What does she have? Let me send some prayers. When somebody starts telling me, I think Mary Jane made a bad decision, I think she's crazy, I'm out of the room. Because that's opinion. And that's part of what you eat. The air that you breathe, and you know, for my poor clients in New York City and Chicago and Detroit that with windows that never open, you know what I mean? It's like that's part of your what you consume too.
Exactly.
And they've been doing this for thousands of years, And mm-hmm. we still don't seem to see it. And people, I also say, when somebody says to me, I got a headache, my first question is, what don't you want to think about? And my second question is, what did you eat?
Yeah, there you go. See?
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
This whole, how many years have you been dealing with the Ayurvedic?
Well, I started studying it in 94. And, you know, I guess for many people that might seem like a long time, it's more than 20 years, but, you know, Ayurveda is 5,000 years old, and you could study it every day of your life and not learn everything there is to learn about it. It's such a deep, rich science, you know. And what I like about it is that it's changed my way of looking at everything. You know, this is the science of life. So that includes everything, right? Everything. So I look at everything when I go in my backyard, when I'm out in the store and everything, and I'm like, oh, how are the elements expressing in this particular thing? You know, how are they expressing and how can this feed me? And, you know, it's almost a spiritual practice when you think about it, about how we're all connected. We're all the same. Every single one of us is made up of the five elements. So we're all the same, all of our prakriti. It's just matter, matter, matter. But then there's something besides that that animates the matter, right? And that's the soul. So that's what Ayurveda says. Everybody's made up of the five elements and then the soul.
Well, you also have a wonderful book, and of course, I'm going to order these after our radio show. What's your dharma? And you talk about the bhakti and the karma and the raja. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Okay, so this is also a science that comes from Vedanta. So Vedanta is the ancient Vedic text that are like the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, and all this. So this wisdom is in all of those ancient books. And it basically says that there are four spiritual paths in life. And I've kind of expanded on that to apply to our Western concept to say that these paths are our purpose. So our real purpose is not our job or whatever we do. It's who we are. It's discovering who we are. And how do we go about doing that? Well, each of us has a different spiritual learning style, and that's where these four spiritual paths come in. So if you can imagine a four-lane freeway in front of you, okay, and it's taking you from where you are right now to where you want to be. And where you want to be is defined differently by different religions or different spiritual practices. Some people might say, I want to be happy, you know, and that's enough. I want to be happy. Some people might say, I want to be enlightened, you know, I want to be love. I want to be free. Freedom is my goal, whatever it is. These four paths take us from where we are to where we want to be. So there's four paths, and whichever one you go down, the scenery is the same. We're all going down the same freeway, and the scenery is the lessons that we learn all along the way. But because we all have different learning styles, we learn those lessons in different ways. So the first lane is called bhakti. Bhakti is the path of love, the path of devotion. So people who are bhaktas, or people who practice bhakti yoga, are people who learn best by loving, by in relationships that they have with other people. You know, they have really big hearts. They're good caretakers. They greet everyone with a hug. You know, it's that kind of open-heartedness. And in the Vedic practice, it's that you see the spirit or the soul or the God or the light or whatever you want to term you want to use, it all ends up being the same thing. within each person. So what you love is more than just the person. You love the spirit within the person and the spirit that resides within each one of us. So that's what you're serving, you know. That's what you're giving to.
Yeah, we know people like that.
Yeah.
And then the next path is?
Is karma yoga. So karma yoga is the path of service, the path of work. So these are people like Mother Teresa, who served everyone equally, right? Who is like, how can I be of help? What can I do to serve you? And when they look at people, they see the God within, and they're serving that God within the person. And they understand that we're all connected and that we all need to help each other. So that's the way the world works, you know, is that we need to be of service. So at first it might be like people who work for a paycheck. No, that's not the point. You're not working for a paycheck. You work to be of service, and then the money, the paycheck or whatever, comes after that. So you can be a karma yogi and have any kind of a job. It's not that you have to be working in philanthropy or working for a nonprofit organization. You could be, you know, a teller at a bank and be a karma yogi because you see your role as helping all the people who come to you. So you're purpose in life is to serve.
That's excellent. What about Raja?
So Raja is the path of meditation. So the purpose for Raja yogis is to be. So Raja is all about going within, going deep within, and understanding more about yourself. Because when you understand more about yourself, you're understanding more about other people, because we're all the same. So it's like learning on that higher plane and going into meditation and being in silence, things like that. So a Raja yogi can just be present and observe. They don't have to study. They don't have to teach. They don't have to love. They don't have to serve. They could just be and observe and be in the moment and look at the moment as now and be present and be there. Raja yogis are very good listeners, you know. I think a lot of
let me tell you a little story. I was in China I spent some time with a Beaufort doctor, and we went into a hospital in China, and in the corner of the room was this little tattered rug with a little guy chewing on something, and he didn't seem right, very clean, and I go, of course, in my egotistic way, I go, what's he doing in here? And he looked at me and he said, he's a presence healer. Whenever he's in the company of anybody, they heal faster. I says, but he's just like playing with his beads and he's just like chewing his thing. And he goes, he's a Raja path, and people pay him to come into the rooms when people are sick because they get better 50-60% quicker. And up until about 1995, I noticed like one out of 1,000 people were a Raja healer, they're a good presence healer. After 95, it dropped down real quickly between 95 and 2000 to about one out of 100.
Wow.
So now I'm noticing people who don't learn all the techniques and don't spend the years, you know, like I did studying with shamans all over the world and stuff, and they don't have to do anything. They only have to be.
Yeah,
and
perfect.
They're doing healing, and I'm noticing that this path seems to have escalated a lot since the 70s till now. And I've been pretty blown away by how many people, my spirit guides go, oh, this is a presence healer. And I'd see one up until 95. I saw maybe three. After 95, the numbers went from 1 in 4,000 or 5,000 to, by 2000, 1 in 100. So just very interesting to watch that project. And tell me more about Jnana.
So this is it's pronounced so many different ways, but Jan or Jana, I pronounce it Jana.
Jana.
This is the path of knowledge. So if you're a Jani, which means you study the path of Jhana Yoga, it means that your purpose is to know. So these are the people who read a lot. They study a lot. They're very intellectual. They're very much in their mind. They figure things out, you know. My mentor, Deepak Chopra, says that he's a Jhana Yogi, and you know how intellectual he is and all the books that he writes. So they not only study, but they also teach. They make good teachers and everything. They're very much more the scientific type, you know, where the bhakti is all coming from the heart, then the jhani is all coming from the head, and they're the thinkers. And the karma yogi represents like the hands to me. They're out there serving. They're working with their hands. And Raja yoga to me is like the eyes. You close the eyes and go within, you know. So that's how I kind of picture all of them. And each one is valid path. And each one, we have a little bit of us in, or we're on. We can change lanes at any time. There may be times in our lives when we're much more on the path of bhakti yoga. Like I remember when I had my children, all I could think about was, I just want to love these little babies, you know, and just care for them. And it was just all about being the mama, you know. So I was very much the bhakta at that time. And then I remember, you know, when I'm studying in Ayurveda and trying to write these books and translate all this wisdom into, you know, words and sentences that people can understand so they can apply it to their own lives. You know, that's very much a jhana. Jhani, we have to, you know, think a lot. You're really using your head. I'm also a big sister with big brothers, big sisters. So then karma yoga comes into play because I feel very strongly that we each need to serve, that we have to have some kind of an outlet to help our communities, that we can't just be selfish and be helping ourselves, you know, whatever we have, we need to share. So, you know, whether it's wisdom or talent or money or whatever, time, even share your time, I think it's important. So, you know, all of those come into play. And then, of course, now I'm taking classes in Vedanta, and I go to the temple, and for hours we sit in meditation and prayer and chanting and all that, and then I'm in my Raja Yogi mode, you know.
Well, so it sounds like you've worked on all four, like most of us had. We're coming to the half-hour commercial break now. And we'll talk about closure when we get back.
Okay.
Please join us every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time for Stargazing with Star Fuentes. For over 50 years, Star has been a pioneer in metaphysics. She has learned a lifetime of priceless information and is eager to share it with you as only she can. Visit her website at starfuentes.com, then tune in as she covers a weekly topic and then opens up the lines for your questions and comments. Again, that's Stargazing with Star Fuentes, every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
I'm talking with Lisa Coffey. Her website is coffeetalk.com. We're talking about her wonderful books, and she's teaching us a few things tonight. So we're looking at closure, the law of relationship, and I've recently been working on something that I call uncoupling. It's when
yes.
you walk away from a relationship and they don't have to have drama or you said, she said, or anything.
Right.
Say, I've grown off in a different path, and it's not about
mm-hmm.
fighting or arguing, and
mm-hmm.
I'm working on something called uncoupling. Tell me about closure, the law of relationship.
Yeah, so basically, the way this came about is that my sister lost her husband a few years back, and he was young. He was just 46 years old, and she was grieving, and I went through this whole process with her, and I could see the process of grief and everything. And at the same time, I kind of was going through stuff, too, because it brought up old memories about my divorce. And even though I had been divorced 4 years earlier, and I was in a new marriage, and I was in a good place, and everything was great, somehow these thoughts kept coming into my mind, and I didn't know how to handle it. You know, I wasn't sure why this was happening. And I realized that there's a difference between grief and closure. And someone could have grieved and gone through all those five steps of grief that people talk about, you know, and still not have closure. So to me, you know, closure is being able to shut that door, let it go, and move forward powerfully and positively, you know, not have any regrets, not have any questions or anything. So I set out to figure out what the five steps of closure were going to be. So I worked with my sister, and I worked with a bunch of people who'd been divorced, and we did interviews, and I came up with a five-step plan for people to get closure. And it's really changed a lot of lives. It's amazing how well it works.
It sounds amazing. And you have this compact in five steps for us to learn. Now, I imagine closure is also, you know, when IBM fires you from working 20 years there and when you lose a pet. And closure has a wider spectrum than just loving relationships.
Exactly. Like when your kid moves off to college and you've got the empty nest and things change, you know. So basically the premise of the whole thing is the law of relationship. And, you know, a natural law, just like the law of attraction or the law of gravity, is something that just works no matter what. It's a law. And the law of relationship says that we're all connected and we're here to help each other learn and grow. So you need to remember those two parts of it, because it's a thread that runs through every single one of our relationships. And relationships aren't necessarily a forever thing, you know. They're here to help us learn and grow. So once we've learned a lesson, once we've grown, the relationship might change. So I don't think relationships ever end, because part one says we're all connected, right?
Right.
So I have a relationship with people I don't even know, right? Because we're all on this planet together, so we're related in some way or another. And just like those 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing that people play, if you go through that with anybody in the world, you can find out that you're connected to them in some way, shape, or form. You know, it's really amazing. It is such a small world. But we're all connected, and we're here to help each other learn and grow. So if we've learned a lesson and we've got this whole lifetime left to learn more lessons and more lessons and more lessons to get the most out of the life that we have on this planet for this particular length of time, it might be okay to say, okay, on to the next relationship, you know, on to, I got it. You got it. Let's not make each other miserable, you know, conscious uncoupling or whatever you want to call it. Time to move on. And no regrets. I learned from you. You learned from me. And it's all okay.
And, you know, I notice, you know, as we've gotten more civilized, and maybe that's not the word, as we've gotten more conscious, you know, you used to, you know, well, 200 years you have to stay married, you know, for life, you know, and still in the 40s and 50s, people believed that you married one person and you stayed with them even though it didn't work. You know, we got in the 60s and that started to change. And the whole thing of turning a lesson into a blessing, and the exact opposite is so true. The whole non-closure thing, you know. I met somebody who had cancer, and I realized their core issue was they hadn't talked to their brother. And I said, why haven't you talked to your brother? He says, well, you said something at Thanksgiving 17 years ago to my mom. I said, do you remember? And his mom was there with him. Mm-hmm. And I said, she's very elderly. I said, do you remember? She says, this is so stupid. you know, them not talking to each other. And he literally, I told him, you have to go and talk to your brother and to stay alive. And he literally died because he wouldn't go talk. And when we don't have closure and people tell me, oh, it's my last lifetime, but I'm not talking to my brother, sister, first, second, third husband, third child. And we have to remember that we have to come to some type of closure and agreement with these people.
Yeah.
You can't just ignore them, or you're going to come back next lifetime and you're going to be married, or they're going to be your twin.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Or
you want
your
to work
mother.
It out.
Yeah.
And at the same time, though, you have to remember that you can't get closure from any other person. You can only get closure from yourself. So I know a lot of women.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I have people write people letters just so they can write them. And I have them put a stamp on it and put the person's first and last name on it and drop it into a mailbox.
Mm-hmm.
Because it goes to the dead letter office, and it goes out into the universe. But it doesn't necessarily have to go there. And there's so many things that we hang on to that just eat up energy in our life.
Right. I meet women all the time who say, oh, well, I'll have closure when he apologizes. Or if he just would just admit what he did, you know. And I'm like, probably not going to happen. So are you going to carry around this animosity, this burden of resentment and everything? Because it's not hurting him. It's hurting you, you know.
And these are the same women who were going, where's my mate? These are the same women who go, how come I can't find a date or a mate? It's because they haven't closed with their last mate or date, you know?
Right. So you need to get closure.
It's an important book, and I think it's very important that we understand it. I personally forced 105 universal laws down the throat of every one of my students. Wait a minute, that didn't sound so good. No, but that's true, because because we can drive in life. Everybody can get on the highway, and we know what lane to be in, where to stop, where not to park, and everything. But nobody ever reads 105 universal laws. They think there's four of them. You know, they think there's four, like the law of attraction and as above, so below. And I work with my students on studying and looking at all 105 laws, universal laws, because it's important to know what the laws of life are. You know,
if
I was going to get a car in a foreign country, you know, I want to know, you know, when to turn, when to stop, when not to do things, and people just go through life without taking a look at what other people have done for thousands and thousands of years, and they had figured out the laws.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, at the end of my five steps, it's like, how do you know when you have closure? Well, there's a very easy way. When you have gratitude, when all that resentment is gone, the anger is gone, and you say, you know what? I'm grateful for that relationship. I'm grateful for that person. I know it's done. The relationship has changed, and it's not going to change back. But I'm grateful that I had that experience. I learned from it. I grew from it. And even if it's the most terrible situation, you know, of an abuse situation, it can be, you know what? I have no regrets. I'm grateful I did it. I'm a stronger person. I'll never let that happen to me again. I can help advocate for other women because now I know what to look for. I mean, there's all different kinds of blessings in there. Like crazy, you know, so you just have to focus on that, because if you get into that place where you can't let it go, you can't let it go, and you're so stuck, it's going to ruin your life.
It is. Lessons into blessings. Lisa, I'm sure my listening audience is eager to participate with you. Lisa, do you coach? Do you have private appointments? Do you have classes? What goes on with your life?
Yeah, I do. Actually, I have quite a few. So on my website, coffeetalk.com, you can see a letters to Lisa and a contact us button. I do consultations over the phone with people. And you can find those at my site, dharmasmart.com. And there's a link to Dharma Smart on my coffeetalk.com site, too. But Dharma Smart's like my online store where people can get books and audios. And I have several e-courses. And I also have, you know, just for no money, an advice column. So people can write a letter to Lisa, email, and I'll email them back. And it's totally free.
That's so such a good service. And do you do Skype?
Yeah. I do Skype. Yep, Skype.
Great.
Or phone, or, you know, whatever's easy. I'll just do pretty much anything.
And when are you going to do a workshop next?
Well, I've got this weekend in California, Mindful Her. I'm speaking at Mindful Her. We're talking about the dharmas. We're going to be diving deep into finding your life purpose. I've got in 2 weeks an event called Veda Mila in downtown L.A. where I'm talking about the doshas and relationships. So how you can couple up with your perfect dosha match, things like that. So, and I'm hosting some charity events out here. Most of the stuff I do is in California, but I am taking my very first wellness retreat, and 24 lucky people get to come with me if they so choose, and we're going to Laredo, Mexico. And Laredo, Mexico is in Baja California, Mexico. It's on the east coast of Baja. It's probably the most beautiful place I've ever been. The water is pristine. So you can swim in it. They have paddle boarding. We're going to be going whale watching. I chose this time of year. We're going to be going February 28th through March 3rd. And I chose this time of year because it's whale watching season. And everyone at the hotel was telling me, when you come back, you got to come when the whales are here. Because the baby whales actually come up to the boat and you can pet them. And I'm like, I want to pet a whale, you know. So that's why
and
we're going.
And it's a month-long retreat?
No, it's just 5 days. So February 28th through March 3rd. And it's at this beautiful resort, Villa del Palmar. I got it amazing rates. So the rate for the retreat and all the excursions, the room, the food, everything, because it's all-inclusive, is cheaper than if you went online and just got the hotel by itself. So it was a really, really good deal. Yeah.
Yeah,
and all
that happens.
Because I'm going to be teaching classes.
And is it on your website somewhere?
Yeah, it's on dharmasmart.com. So when you get a Dharmasmart, and it'll say all that. And I think I have other links. I kind of sprinkle it throughout. And I'm on Facebook. If you go to Lisa Coffee Talk.
Yeah, I just became your friend today, I think. Or
good,
maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe I got too many friends. But I'll get my business number up there. And I'm going to tweet you and Twitter you. And
good.
We're going to do that. And I highly
recommend
people to participate. Let me ask Sean a question. Sean, is our audience even listening out there? Are there any questions?
I've been taking a lot of listeners who've called in. No questions yet. They just seem intent on learning some new things by listening to you two.
All right. Well, that's wonderful that they're listening to Lisa at coffeetalk.com. Lisa Coffee. Lisa, what do you think is some of the most important things that people need to know for the upcoming year and need to maybe not necessarily know about the world or know what's going to happen inside of ourselves or what the energy is going to be like? What do you think is going on for this end of this year and the beginning of 2016?
Yeah, what I think is most important is we need to take care. And really, you know, people talk about mindfulness and things like that, and that is important. But what I think is very important for, you know, coming up 2016 and whenever else is to really take care. So it's taking care of body, mind, spirit, and space. Taking care of body means eating the right foods, right? going to bed at the same time, getting up at the same time. Ayurveda has a very specific lifestyle recommendation for us, and they say that we should go to bed by 10 p.m., and we should get up at 6 a.m. And the reason for that is that the universe has natural cycles, natural rhythms to it. And when we are in harmony with the universe, then we can function at our best, at our optimal, our most efficient, our most effective. So we need to be in bed by 10 p.m. because from 10 to 2, that's when our body gets the rest it needs. It's the time when our bodies heal, when all the cells regenerate and all that kind of stuff. And then from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m., that's when our minds heal and our brain activity calms down, when we have our REM sleep, and our REM sleep is before. So when we have our dreams and we work out in our subconscious all of the things that we couldn't work out in the conscious state. So it's very important to get that really good night's sleep. And then you want to get up at 6 because this is when the universe starts its day. The sun is rising, and we are meant to rise with the sun and to, you know, get with the program. Start your day by meditating, you know. Put a little bit of oil on your skin. This is, Ayurveda recommends that we're, none of us are getting enough oil. So put some beautiful vegetable oil on your skin, some sesame oil, olive oil, corn oil, something really nice. Just put it on your skin. Meditate for 20 minutes, you know. Have a little bit of exercise, eat your breakfast, take a shower, you know, and start your day mindfully and carefully that you're taking care of yourself. You know, watch what you eat, watch what you say, watch what you smell, watch what you see, all those kind of things, you know. And then the other thing Ayurveda says is that our largest meal of the day should be eaten around lunchtime, midday, between noon and 1 p.m., because this is the time when our digestion is the strongest. So, you know, almost every culture says you are what you eat, right? Ayurveda says you are what you digest. We could eat the most perfect, beautiful foods, but if our digestion isn't good and we can't digest that food, it's not doing us any good. So eating our largest meal of the day at midday is one of the best things we can do to boost our digestion so that all the food gets assimilated into the body properly. You know, digestion is a 3-step process. It's you know, digesting the food, assimilating the food so the food goes to the right organs and the vitamins and minerals and nutrients go to the right organs, and then eliminating the food. And this is another problem that Americans tend to have a lot. You know, and that's why we see all these crazy commercials on TV about, are you constipated? Do you have diarrhea? It's like everybody has one or the other, right? I mean, this is the American
diet.
Well,
you know, it's really simple to me. You eat, and an hour and 45 minutes later, you should have a bowel movement. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just simple, plain body stuff to me.
Yeah, and if you're eating the right foods, that's what happens, you know. But if you're not, then you get clogged up and other things happen, and then you take medications, then you get side effects from the medication, and it's a downward spiral, you know.
Then you get side effects from the energies you have, from the side effects of the energies of the energies of the energies. And
just
look at any Reader's Digest or TV commercial. They say, take this for this, and then three-quarters of the time is spent telling you about the side effects.
The small print, yeah. The guy
it's almost
point,
worth healing yourself.
Dizziness and heart attack and blah, blah, you may have to run the risk of blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so it's like pretty crazy that we go through all of that. And then I think a lot of us work too hard. We don't have the kind of balance. We're in front of the screens way too much, whether it's the phone or the computer or the television or the movie screen. I mean, we're wrecking. Talk about taking in bad energies and stuff, and we're wrecking our eyes. I mean, that is food that we're eating through our eyes, and that is just so bad for us. So we need to get out more in nature. Look at the green grass. Look at the blue sky, you know. Just look at your little pet. Take your pet
for
a walk.
One of the Curandera say is if you see 75% when you look, like into the jungle or out, and you see 75% green, you're getting a healing.
Yeah,
so,
beautiful.
You know, and that's just something. Every time I go through, we have a road here called Gulf of Gorge, and every time I look and I focus, so, you know, I don't get too much sky and too much earth, like, I got to get there right into that little place.
Yeah.
I do get that. Well, Lisa, it's been a pleasure having you, Lisa Coffee at coffeetalk.com, author, mentor. She's been a many TV show, an extraordinary lady. Please go to her website and participate with her. Now let's talk a little bit about me. I have the Divine Intervention class coming up January 4th to the 14th in Hot Springs, Arkansas, with the beautiful crystals and mineral waters. Divine Intervention is a way of healing from the Mexican Mayan curanderas. It is most important. Most of the time we're going to be practicing with cancer people. It is a very powerful prayer. It's one of the loudest prayers that I know. Come play with me and learn divine intervention. And take a deep breath. And breathe again. And gently, easily, everything that Lisa and I said that's appropriate to you sinks into your subconscious and unconscious mind. And somewhere deep in your spirit, you find motivation to act upon what is alignment with you. You find curiosity to go forth and learn more. You find a way to be of service. You open your heart and you study. And you study. Remember, Ayurvedism says, we eat everything. Well, good night, everybody. And thank you very much, Lisa. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Please join us again next week for another enlightening episode. For more information on Star's classes or services, please visit her website at starfuentes.com or call the office at 501-609-0660. That's 501-609-0660. Good night.